Leading Edge Medicine provides only general medical information. Since everyone's individual situation is unique, you should consult your own physician before taking any action related to your personal health. All content of this program is intended for general informational purposes only. Good morning and welcome to Leading Edge Medicine with Dr. Jerry Mixon and Dr. Samira Umat. Leading Edge Medicine is sponsored by Longevity Medical Clinics and is devoted to helping you feel and function better tomorrow than you do today by providing the newest and most advanced medical care designed to improve both your body and your brain. Leading Edge Medicine will keep you informed regarding the very latest developments in science and medicine while highlighting some of the Northwest's most prominent physicians. All while helping you separate the science from the silly and the facts from the fiction. This is live call-in radio at its very best, giving you the opportunity to participate in the show. Now, here are your hosts for Leading Edge Medicine, Dr. Jerry Mixon and Dr. Samira Umat, along with their co-host, Lynette Morgan.
Oh, and a very good morning to you.
I've got an echo.
I hear echoes.
All right.
That's kind of fun. A little different. No. We'll get that taken care of.
We hear ourselves twice.
That's right. We don't like that.
Mr. Engineer, the studio, push whichever button you push to make this go away.
Okay. He will do that while we are here. And welcome to Leading Edge Medicine. I'm going to give that phone number out for those of you who want to call and get into the show right away. It's 1-800-465-8770. 800-465-8770. And we have Dr. Jerry Mixon in the studio and Dr. Samira Umat. Dr.
Hey.
Umat, welcome back. So glad that you're back.
Good morning. Yes. It doesn't seem like I was ever gone.
Oh, well, you had a wedding. At least that's what we told people.
Yeah. This has been the year for weddings for us. There have been so many relatives that have had weddings in their families. And I made a conscious effort this year to be present for family and friends. So funerals and weddings. In the past, you know, work has always been an excuse and it's been hard to take time off. But this year, and things have happened over time. I'm getting older. We're all getting older. And I've decided that if we're invited to a wedding or a funeral or we hear about anything in the family, we will make every effort to be present for them.
And they all decided to do it this year.
So far, yes.
Yes. Like since summer and fall.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay.
All right. I need them to stop that.
Yeah, they're working on it. Our engineers are working on it. Luckily, it doesn't come out. So that's a good thing. So while they're working on that, let's talk to Dr. Mixon. What is making medical news headlines? What are people most concerned about? Or what have you read about that we can get excited about?
Well. I
knew you would do that. Right.
This is going to drive me crazy.
Yeah.
Damn, I wish I fixed that.
Yes.
All right.
Jerry, focus. Ignore that you can hear yourself twice.
Twice, yes.
Yes.
At least. This week I've been reading about several things. But before I talk about what I read about, let me answer a question. Somebody called in last week while you were down in sunny Mexico. Mm-hmm. And ask about GMO foods and inflammation and complications of GMO foods.
Okay.
So I had never really looked at it, so I promised the lady that I would indeed look at it this time to see what the literature said. And so I've made myself some notes. First of all, very few human studies in GMO foods long term. The Food and Drug Administration looks at studies to make sure that it is, quote, safe.
Mm-hmm.
But most of those studies are only about 3 months long.
Okay.
And they're looking for illnesses, cancers, that sort of thing.
That doesn't happen so quickly sometimes.
That's the problem. And so we really have a dearth of information about long-term use among human beings.
Uh-huh.
But animal studies are kind of fascinating, and it depends on the animal. Different animals have different reactions. Interestingly, pigs, which are genetically pretty close to human beings, so we use pigs in a lot of human studies, they indeed had inflammatory changes in their stomachs from a variety of GMO foods. So, okay, pigs are one thing. Hamsters, on the other hand,
had, hamsters?
Yes. Had fertility issues.
Okay.
And enlarged, thickened uteruses in the females. So they've looked at a variety of laboratory. Rats, on the other hand, had no problems at all with GMO foods.
Monkeys?
I did not see any monkey studies.
Okay. Dogs? Okay.
So as I'm looking at these darn things, I'm trying to say, okay, what about the studies that are 3 months long,
yeah,
6 weeks long, two weeks long in a variety of animals that show some things, and then in humans, essentially no data.
Right.
On the other hand, there is a correlation, I don't know if it's causation, with a variety of human problems being seen worldwide that could be related to GMO foods, but could also be related to a lot of other factors.
Okay.
You know, what's due to GMO? What's due to microplastics? What's due to increased stresses? What's due to electromagnetic radiation? What's due to, I mean, we are, as a world right now, permeated with a variety of things.
Indeed.
About which we have very little long-term data.
That's right. Yes.
So is it possible? Yes. But at the same time, GMO food use has gone up around the world. So have all of these other things.
Yeah.
In fact, I read an article yesterday saying that we now have microplastics in the clouds. So it rains microplastics at us when it rains.
Yeah.
So we no longer have pure rainwater. We have microplastic infused rainwater. So it does make it very hard to tease out. So on the disease side, you know, dropping fertility worldwide, especially in the developed countries where we use more GMO, it's a correlation. We're using more GMO. We're getting fewer and fewer babies.
Mm.
How much of that is due to the easy availability of birth control and or abortion, and how much is due to the industrialization and the fact that women are no longer in the home primarily but want to protect their careers and so are deciding to get married later in life and have fewer babies. So it's hard to tease out.
Okay.
On the other side, yes, a variety of animal studies show that a large number of animals have a wide variety of problems, including decreased fertility. So could be with human beings. Yeah. How do we take humans that have never had GMO in their life, precious few anymore, because they start getting in their baby food, and they get it in their mother's milk because the mother is drinking the GMO
foods.
Sure. So how do we find a naive population of humans to then put on GMO and compare them to a large population of other non-GMO exposed humans? And then there's the World Health Organization position, which is simply that genetically modified crops have increased crop yields worldwide dramatically.
They have indeed, yeah.
And that without GMO foods,
yes,
half the world's population would starve to death.
Right, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So do we doom 3 or 4 billion people to death by starvation by taking away the GMO foods? It's a rather harsh. On the other hand, do we really want 30-year-olds dying of colon cancer? Because we are seeing a big rise in colon cancers.
Colon cancer, too. That's indeed true. Yeah.
I know. And lung cancers and breast cancers. So, you know, we're moving cancer to a younger and younger group. Could it be due to GMO? Certainly could. You know, it increases cancer in some animals, maybe us. So I don't know. You know, the more I read the literature,
the murkier it gets.
The murkier it gets, exactly. There is cause to worry.
Yeah.
I just am not sure how we sort it out precisely. And do we do we stop all the GMO on the planet? Mm. And when the world gets plunged into revolution and starvation.
Yeah. No, you're right. When we manage chronic disease and when we do the, you know, what we do in our clinics is a functional medicine approach. We look at all causes and we do food sensitivity testing and we do toxicology. It's really difficult to tease out what are people going to stop. You know, if there's a mold intoxication, where is it coming from? Is it the home? Is it the environment that you're working in? Or is it some of the foods that you're sensitive to? Is it dairy? Is it almonds? Like, people can come to me with huge lists of food sensitivities. But then if they tease all of those away and stop using those foods, do they really feel that much better? Or is there something else that we haven't picked up?
Ah.
And it becomes really difficult to manage these chronic illnesses because sometimes they may become better temporarily only to then have some other issues that are related to something that we didn't pick up earlier. And when I do these toxicology studies, sometimes it's like, oh my gosh, can we even take anything anymore? Even the air we breathe is not pure anymore.
Yeah. So
it's actually quite depressing.
Well, it is. Yeah. It's hard to tease out sometimes.
Yes, it is.
But yeah, all we do is we do our best.
Yeah.
I don't remember the lady's name that asked me that last week, but I hope
about the
GMO foods.
Yeah,
it is not a satisfying answer. I know, and I apologize for that, but I just can't find a satisfying answer.
But you know, Jerry, modern medicine is like that nowadays. Mm-hmm. We don't really get a clear cut yes or a no. It's somewhere in between. It's always in a gray zone. If you do this, the consequences are this. If you do that, the consequences are that. And you really have to pick up which are the better consequences. Mm-hmm. What is worse for you? There's never really a great answer. You know, is Tylenol okay for me all the time? Well, no. Is Aleve better for me? Well, how are your kidneys? Yeah. You know, it's always that toss-up.
It is indeed. And then I had a lady who called last week. About ivermectin and
chemotherapy,
and her husband's
we sent her to you.
That's right. That was Pam from Graham who called in last week.
And then I got an email from her husband who said, "Well, you discussed it with my wife on the air, but you didn't give her the proper dose that I should take."
Oh, okay.
Because ivermectin has been shown to be toxic to a wide variety of cancers. It is being used as a adjunctive therapy, that is a therapy in addition to the standard therapies, but it is not being used anywhere I have seen as a standalone therapy. Mm. And this was a gentleman who, as I got more information from his email, has had an MRI that indicates he probably has a prostate cancer, but has not yet had a biopsy. And so we don't have confirmation and we don't have genetic studies on the tumor.
Okay.
And in the literature, since it's not been used or approved as a standalone therapy, we don't know a dose.
Mm.
You know, there is no real dose in the literature.
Mm.
So we do know that in the studies, the higher the dose, the more of the cancer cells it killed.
Yeah.
Okay. But, you know, I'd rather not kill the patient along with the cancer cells.
Mm.
And so how high a dose would be high? I don't know. Nobody is doing it as yet.
Mm.
So, you know, on the one hand, I really approve people who, when they have an illness and a problem, they get online and they start investigating.
Sure.
But in the current state of the art, often that investigation is just going to show them that, yes, there are some studies that show this might help or it does help at certain doses, but because we do not really have human studies looking at this particular situation, we don't know the dose.
Right.
And that's the situation with him. I'd be delighted to tell him the dose if I could find it in the literature, but I can't.
Yeah.
Okay.
And so what I told him was, A, go back to your urologist, get your biopsies. Get the genetic studies done on it.
Right.
You know,
right.
And then let's evaluate and see if your oncologist is willing to use the ivermectin along with whatever else they recommend.
Right. You know, a few weeks ago, we had gotten a question about a prostate biopsy. And the question was, does the biopsy increase risk of disseminating cancer?
Right.
And so if his concern is that, we can easily tell him that that's not a risk.
Right.
The biopsy will not increase your risk of disseminating that prostate cancer.
Yes. For that, there's no evidence.
Right.
All right.
All right. Good discussion. Hopefully that is helpful.
Let's take a break.
We are listening to the music. We're going to take a quick break. If you have a question for Dr. Umat or Dr. Jerry Mixon, here's that number to call in. It's 1-800-465-8770. That's 1-800-465-8770. We're taking a break. We'll be right back with more Leading Edge Medicine. Medicine. Good morning on this beautiful November. I was watching the sunrise as I was coming in. So beautiful.
It is actually nice when the sun comes out. I mean, yesterday was beautiful. Day before, it was so bad. It was
dark and windy. So we love it when we can see it and it's peaceful and calm.
Senior exec team and I walked out for lunch earlier in the week.
Uh-huh.
And it was that one day when the sun came out right at noon and it was bright. And it was, and we just walked out and the sun hit us and we all just stopped and basked in the sunshine.
Yes.
Just for a moment.
The grass was still soaking wet, so we were not going to go lay on the grass.
No.
But it was one of those, warm, sunny, I love this.
Yes.
Because we're getting so much gloom right now.
I know. Fall can be a hit or a miss.
What do you know? You just got back from Mexico.
That's right.
Although it looks like you used your sunscreen or you stayed in the tavern. I'm not sure which, because you're not burned at all.
I told you. I wasn't there long enough.
No. Oh, I love it. Okay, doctors, you ready for some phone calls?
Let's take a few phone calls.
Okay, I'll give the call phone number one more time. 1-800-465-8770. Our first caller from Chehalis. We have Joe on the line. Good morning, Joe.
Good morning, Joe from Chehalis.
Good morning, you guys. Hey, I've got a sister who recently went through breast cancer, and everything went well, but they wanted her to put her on hormone blockers, and nobody wants to give her progesterone or what's the other one?
Estrogen.
What's the main
estrogen?
Her cancer feeds on both of those. So they're saying that she can have testosterone, but doesn't the blocker destroy the testosterone also?
Yes, but you could give her testosterone. Yes. Okay, let's talk about, because some of the words you used there were common understanding. They're also wrong. All right. The tumor does not feed on estrogen, at least not the estrogen in her system. What happens is human female breast tissue needs estrogen and progesterone. It does very well. So that's why we see the lowest incidence of breast cancer in women when they have the highest levels of estrogens and progesterone.
Mm-hmm.
And as their estrogen progesterone levels start dropping with age, then the risk of breast cancer starts going up and up and up. And the lower the levels of estrogen and progesterone in their system, the higher their risk of getting breast cancer. So clearly, it wasn't the estrogen or progesterone that caused the cancer. In fact, you can kind of envision it this way. Breast tissue that desperately needs these to be healthy, when it starts getting starved for estrogen and progesterone, the breast tissue undergoes a mutation. It actually is genetically damaged and changes its nature so that now it can produce its own growth factors and estrogen and progesterone. And so what you now got is a tissue that no longer depends on the hormones in her system. It now makes its own. Okay? And so all of those growth factors are now being produced within the tumor. Now, what we really wish we could do is turn off the hormone production in the tumor.
Exactly.
But we don't know how to do that.
Right.
So what we do is we give them a hormone blocker, something and a that turns off all their luteinizing hormones. So they no longer make sex hormones, period. In the whole body. Because when you turn it off in the whole body, you're turning it off in the tumor too, because the tumor is in the body.
Right.
Right. And so we shut it down so that the tumor will no longer make the hormones that it's trying to make.
Right. Except Dr. Glaser did her studies on breast tissue where she put a pellet with testosterone and an estrogen blocker
right.
in the breast tissue itself.
That's right. Because the issue we've got with just giving testosterone to women with breast cancer is that testosterone and estrogen are almost the same molecule.
Right.
There's one hydroxyl group different on the molecule. And so the tumor can take some testosterone and convert it into estrogen and make its own estrogen out of the testosterone. So what Dr. Glaser did was she took testosterone pellets that she mixed with a estrogen blocker, an aromatase inhibitor, and she actually put these pellets in the breast around the tumor. And so the lady got a lot of testosterone, but she could not, neither she nor the tumor could turn it into the estrogens. And the tumors just shriveled right up. Looking at the x-rays before and after are just remarkable because the high testosterone load that the tumor could not then convert really shrank the tumors down because testosterone is a very potent anti-breast cancer hormone.
Well, yes. And then what happened was that these women didn't need oral estrogen blockers.
No.
And unfortunately, recently they've increased the criteria for use of oral estrogen blockers from 5 years to 7 years.
Yes.
So, and that's in an effort to reduce the risk of breast cancer recurrence.
Sure. But in the Glaser studies, the high dose of estrogen blocker was limited to the
breast tissue only.
And so she got the benefit of her hormones in the rest of her body.
Right.
She just didn't get it in the breast.
Exactly.
Which, I mean, those women just thrived.
Well, yeah, and that would be the ideal, right? If we could localize the cancer treatment to the organ where the cancer is and not have the systemic side effects. I mean, that's the holy grail. That's what we're all wanting,
right?
Right? We all recognize this.
Because women need estrogens.
Right.
You know, without it, their cognition declines dramatically. So the brain is not working well anymore. The skin ages 10 years in one. The bones start thinning out really fast. So they start developing osteoporosis, depression, fatigue, all kinds of bad systemic effects of not having your estrogens.
Exactly. Same as in postmenopause.
Yeah. So yes, we do use the estrogen blockers, but not because we really want to lower the woman's estrogen. We just want to lower the estrogen in the tumor.
Right. And the only way to do it successfully right now is orally.
Right. Is that
helpful for you, Joe?
Well, we still have a hard time deciding what direction she should go at this point because nobody wants to give her estrogen and prednisone. Just giving her testosterone, I mean, she's still going to go through all these things with mental decline and depression, which she already suffers from already. So,
yeah. Actually, testosterone is a potent anti-depression drug, too. It causes people to have great self-confidence, an optimistic, bright outlook on the future.
Yeah, but Jerry, some of them are now restricting testosterone use too. And so a lot depends upon
the oncologist.
And also what kind of a tumor did she have? What stage was she in? How bad is it? How has it spread or not? I mean, if she's got metastatic disease, certainly even I wouldn't recommend anything for her right now. And she should just do the estrogen blocking therapy to improve her risk for survival. And then individually, we have to kind of gauge if it, is it just DCIS? Is it just restricted? Have they had surgery? Is it all gone? Can we do an estrogen metabolism study? Can we just put her on a little low-dose estriol? And again, the oncologists have to be on board. But if they are usually about 1 to 2 years out with just a local DCIS, which has been removed, and there's no cancer right now, then a little low-dose testosterone, they usually don't object to. I always have them clear with their oncologist, and I find that they don't object to a little low-dose testosterone. I tell my patients that I'm still monitoring very closely, and I do want to do an estrogen metabolism study to look at the breakdown products to see is it really safe for them or not. But estriol later and just a little bit testosterone is sometimes okay.
Yeah.
Again, depends on each individual.
It depends on the patient, but it also depends on the oncologist. It
absolutely does, 100%.
Yeah. Yes.
Some are on board, and some I find, even today, are very resistant.
Mm. Yeah. So well, not all cancer doctors agree on any particular course of therapy.
Do you guys have people that you recommend that might be closer to your line of thinking as far as oncologists go?
Yeah. I actually talked to one a few weeks ago.
Okay.
I don't remember her name. She was an oncologist and was actually applying to come work for us.
Oh, okay. Okay.
And getting very deep into functional medicine and was indeed familiar with the Glazier studies and the Donovitz studies.
Okay.
I'm blocking her name right now. I can't
Which hospital system do you remember that?
Was she local, no, Dr. Mixon?
She's local. She's okay. She was in Bellevue.
Okay.
So it could be Overlake, Swedish, Evergreen,
yeah.
UW.
But I don't remember where. I was more interested in her personal credentials.
Mm.
And I probably ought to go look it up. And
okay.
Yeah.
But they're also probably restricted by insurance. So
maybe.
Mm.
Yeah. You know, I have sent several people to Dr. Glazier over in Ohio.
Yes, we have to. Yes, that's right.
And she is no longer in full-time practice. She's gone more to research, but she has several doctors in her area who are familiar with her work and follow it up. So we've actually had a couple of people fly to Ohio to be evaluated.
Mm-hmm.
Is there any chance I could call you next week if you had time to find out who this person was?
Yeah, send me an email. Go to our website, look at contact us, send an email, say we talked on the radio, and then I can look it up and send you back an email, okay?
All right. Thank you very much.
You're welcome, sir. Bye-bye.
Very good. Thank you, Joe.
And it's just that we've got our our video marketing lady in town this next week, and I'm going to be spending a lot of time making new videos.
Wonderful.
And so phone calls are going to be difficult for me to answer, but email I can grab whenever I'm free.
Got it. All right, we're going to take a quick break here. We will be right back with more Leading Edge Medicine. We'd love to talk with you at 1-800-465-8770. That's 1-800-465-8770. We'll be back with more Leading Edge Medicine. Stay right there. It's Leading Edge Medicine. My name is Lynette here, along with Dr. Jerry Mixon and Dr. Samira Umat today. We are taking your calls, and we've got a bunch of them lined up. So, doctors, here we go. We have, we've got Dennis on the line calling in from Battleground. Hi there, Dennis.
Hello, Dennis.
Good morning. Good morning, everybody.
Good morning.
I've got a question on chromium as it relates to A1C, and I'm getting conflicting results. Looking it up online, can chromium reduce A1C?
Well, chromium can help reduce cravings for sugar. So if you're eating less sugar, then you'll definitely lower hemoglobin A1C. Do we use it to help our patients that have high sugar levels? Yes, we do. And the simple reason is we want them to have less cravings. And it usually works very well. But I have never seen it work alone. I usually have to add a second or a third agent. And then also it depends upon how high your hemoglobin A1C is.
Either what, Gymnema or berberine?
I like berberine. I love berberine. And I usually start that first and I go up on that dose and then I add Gymnema. And that's in our healthy blood sugar support, Gymnema Silvestri. Yeah. So to answer your question, yes, it can help. Depends upon how bad the cravings are and depends upon how high the sugar is. In and of itself, usually alone, it's probably not the best agent.
So what you're seeing probably is the fact that, it doesn't have a direct effect on the sugar. It's indirect.
Yeah.
It changes your appetite. So you eat less simple carbohydrate, which in turn lowers your sugar, but it works better for some people than others.
Right. And you got to give it time. I mean, everybody can overcome any craving or not. You know, you give in or you can overcome it.
Yep.
I don't have a craving for sugar, but I,
okay.
my wife is Asian. We've been married for 60 years. And so we eat rice, a great deal of rice.
Which is a simple carbohydrate, yes.
Sure. I mean, if you can switch out from white rice to brown rice or wild rice, that will definitely help a lot. Otherwise, I would say if your sugar is creeping up now, maybe start using a simple chromium with berberine. It's for prevention also. I mean, how high is your sugar? What are we talking about here?
5.5.
Okay.
So yeah, not bad.
Not bad at all. I mean, considered quote-unquote normal. Our goal in our clinic is 5.2% or lower, but 5.7 is pre-diabetes, as you know. So if you are noticing that the trend is upwards, I would certainly say go ahead and start taking chromium. But I would think you would probably need to add some berberine or Gymnema.
Yeah. And the other thing is to lower sugars is physical activity. You've been married for 60 years, which tells me that you're in your late 70s to mid 80s. So
I'll be 83 next month.
Yeah. So
I go to the gym 3 or 4 times a week. So my activity is pretty good.
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 Yeah. Okay. I have one more question if I could.
Sugar. Sure. Go ahead.
Mm-hmm. I have high LDL. My triglycerides are 58. HDL 81, my LDL is 171.
Ooh, okay. What's total cholesterol?
I'm sorry?
Total cholesterol?
Your total cholesterol is 264.
Okay.
The ratio is 3.3.
Yes, because of the high HDL, you got lucky.
That's right.
Or, whichever way you look at it.
Yeah. Well, he is lucky in that he has something to help compensate. The problem, of course, is that high cholesterols, even high HDLs, are less than ideal.
They are, but anyway, go ahead, sir. What is your question?
What is a good way to lower the LDL?
Go ahead. I see a smile.
Well, there are lots of things. I mean, you already alluded to the fact that you're physically active. This is, again, a red yeast rice with CoQ10 would be my first go-to. Mm-hmm. Although in your case, you do need a fractionation study, I would suggest you do a calcium score to find out what is your risk factor. Remember, lipidemia, hyperlipidemia, and high cholesterol plaques are now creating a risk for a stroke for you. And statin medications do reduce risk for stroke. And so you have to weigh your risk-benefit ratios very carefully. And so it'll be important for you to be seen by your medical provider to see the trend that is in your cholesterol profile. The fractionation study that we do through Cleveland Panel in our clinic tells us what is the size of the LDL particles, how many LDL particles do you have, and are they dangerous for you? The small LDL particles are more dangerous than the large, big, fluffy ones. So if you have tons of the large, big ones, then people don't tend to worry as much. If you have a lot of the small ones, then you are at a risk for a cardiac event. You also want to know what is your lipoprotein particle A. You're now 83 years old, so I think you've beat all the odds. That's not going to be as dangerous for you. But if your sugar is climbing, your cholesterol is climbing, and your lipoprotein particle B is high, then you are at risk. And so, yes, I think red yeast rice with CoQ10 is a very good supplement that'll help lower your risk. The question is your risk high enough for a stroke right now because of age, hyperlipidemia, and high sugar, that should you just go ahead and start taking a statin or not? And that's a conversation with your medical provider to weigh in the pros and cons for you.
Preferably your cardiologist, actually.
I did have the Cleveland test a year and a half ago.
Okay.
And I've got the fluffy cholesterol.
This is probably why you made it 83.
And with the high HDL, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, the high HDL and the fluffy LDL particles are a wonderful combination. And so the odds are, you know, you've made it 83. The odds on you making it to 90 are probably close to 80% or so.
So the question is, you have to follow the trends of the LDL and see how high it is going and how quickly it's going up. And you don't want to let it go up too quickly. So red yeast rice with CoQ10 is probably a good supplement for you.
Okay, I am taking CoQ10. So I'll add the red yeast rice and see what happens. Okay.
Yep.
Sounds well, good luck, sir. Thank you for your call.
Wonderful. The calls keep coming in. We'll just keep answering them, right, doctors?
Yep. Well, you know, his concerns and the fact that he's 83 years old brings to mind a wonderful aging statistic that I read 6 months or so ago.
Okay.
You know, the average American male lifespan is only 76.
Right.
And the average female lifespan in America is up to 79. So women are outliving us on average by about 3 years. But they broke it down further and said that if you have made it to 75 without a serious illness, in other words, if you're not suffering from angina or congestive failure or, you know, diabetes or something like that, if you make it to 75, you got a 90% chance of making it to 86.
Nice.
Just on a general population study. So, you know, so at 87 without serious chronic diseases, I'm saying, okay, so I got a 96% chance, or I got a 90% chance of getting to 86. So that's a good step. Then if you make it to 85, you've got an 80% chance of making it to 93.
Okay.
Wow, it just keeps getting better. And how about 93 if you make it to 93, doctors?
I don't know if they've looked at a large enough population to come up with the statistics. You know, so when I look at that kind of statistics, I sit there and I just kind of smile and say, oh, I like this, I like this.
This is good.
Of course, the problem is that you know, statistics apply to populations, not to individuals. So
yeah, no, you're right, Jerry, but you know, you're in good health, and so that is going to hold you in good stead. And I was reading some longevity physicians saying, just don't die. There's so much going on in this science today. Just don't die.
Yeah. Now, you know, when I started this clinic back in 1997, I made a statement in a seminar, and as soon as I said it, I wanted to kick myself.
Uh-oh.
But I have thought of it many times since then. Somehow my misstatements always come back to haunt me. But I said, you know, there is a chance that this generation might be the last ones to die under 100. You know, because of the things we're learning. Mm. If people will do the things we know that extend health span, we have the ability right now to extend the average American lifespan by 15 years or so. There's no reason we should be dying in our late 70s. We, as a population, should be dying in our late 80s and even 90s as a group. It's just we don't use the information we've got now.
Yeah, you're right. And then I think the bigger issue is not just lifespan, it's quality of life.
Well, it's health span.
It's health span.
It's how long you can stay healthy and productive.
And health span means different things to different people.
It does. But absence of chronic disease is how we usually define it. So, you know, if you're not developing high blood pressure, diabetes, degenerative arthritis, cognitive decline. I mean, these are the quote, diseases of aging.
Yeah.
And if you can avoid those, then you can be productive and happy and, you know, living a vigorous, active life for an extra 10 to 15 years. The problem is we as a population are the total antithesis of what we need to be doing. Mm. We're the fattest industrialized country on the earth, and we're the only industrialized country whose lifespan is declining. We're dying younger. We're now dying 6 years younger than they are in Europe.
Yeah.
Mostly because we eat the same foods. Okay. We have much of the same lifestyle, except that they work. They're more physically active than us. They walk more than we do.
Yeah.
And they're not as fat as we are.
Right.
I mean, those are the two biggies.
They drink more alcohol than we do.
And they smoke.
But yet, yes. If we were to say to somebody, hey, your sugar's running high, you need to cut back on alcohol, they kind of look at you and go, I don't know. Do I really want to give up my alcohol?
Yes. Yeah. And say, well, okay, you keep your alcohol and lose your life. It's a choice. But yes, Europe has some bad habits. A higher percentage of them smoke. They do drink more alcohol than we do, and yet they're living an average of 6 years longer than we are, and they're living a healthier life than we are.
Yeah.
And, you know, we should be looking at what the differences are and why we're in trouble. The recent appointment or the proposal of Robert Kennedy to the Department of Health and Human Services, I've never been a big fan of his, but some of his positions I think we could really benefit from as a country. Now, whether A, will they get him through the appointment, and B, will he be able to put his ideas into practice? Who knows? But, you know, I approve of his desire to make things a matter of free choice.
Mm.
He believes in human freedom, and that we all get to choose what we do and don't take. And, you know, I think that phrase, oft repeated in a different context, my body, my choice, you know, he is inclined to apply to all of our health. You get to make your own choices. Hey, I like that.
Mm. You know,
I kind of feel sorry for people who make bad choices and make themselves sick, but, you know, it's their body, their life, their choice.
Very good. Dr. Mixon and Dr. Umat will be right back with more Leading Edge Medicine in just a moment. If you'd like to give us a call, we would love to talk with you as well. Here is the phone number to get through. We are live in the studio today. 1-800-465-8770. That's 1-800-465-8770. Leading Edge Medicine. We'll be right back. Stay right there. Leading Edge Medicine. Good morning. My name is Lynette. I am here with Dr. Umat and Dr. Jerry Mixon today. Here's the number to get through. It's 1-800-465-8770. That's 1-800-465-8770. We have another caller on the line. We're headed to Bellevue, not too far away. We have Lee calling in. Good morning, Lee.
Good morning, Lee.
Good morning. It's a nice day.
Oh, yes.
Dr. Mixon, I had a question about testosterone cream. I've been using it for 20 years, bioidentical, and I'm presently putting it on the testicles. Mm-hmm. And my score came in at 300 for my testosterone level. Mm-hmm. And I have a naturopath who is saying, well, you're not absorbing it, so I'd suggest you use a pellet. And I've heard you say that that's not such a good idea, especially because I do wash it off every day, like you had suggested, in the evening.
All right.
What was the level?
But you said
300. Oh, I should mention, I I'm 80 years old.
How old?
80.
80, okay. But 300, said, 300 said, is a very, very high.
Total. He's saying total, I think. Is that your total or your free testosterone?
No, that's the total.
Yeah, okay. Total is 300.
Yeah. So 300 is, and is low.
So it depends upon the dose?
Yep.
Do you know your dose of the cream?
20 clicks.
Well, but how much testosterone is in the cream?
Oh, I have to look at that. I can never figure out what these things mean because
But it should say something like 100 milligram per cc or per gram, or 150 milligrams per cc per gram, or something like that.
Yeah, the other thing she said, the reason why she's trying to get me to take this pellets is because she says at your age you're not going to produce any testosterone anyway, because I said that's why I wash it off every night.
Yeah. We have you wash it off though to maintain your libido and to prevent testicular atrophy, so your testicles don't shrivel up and go away, and so that you still maintain an interest in eroticism. It's the rise and fall of testosterone that triggers a man's interest. If it goes up and stays up, then interest fades away.
Okay. I'm not crazy about that. What it says here on the label is 100% POW 500 grams, GM. That's the only thing it says here other than the number of ticks.
Okay. 500 grams is probably the amount in the clicker?
The dispenser.
Yeah.
Yeah, in the dispenser. Okay. So here's the thing. Sometimes we do find skin resistance to the base of the cream. Mm-hmm. And we then change the base of the cream. We usually start with something that is light and absorbable, like a Versa base. And then we change either to a Lipoderm base or to an Atrovis hydrogel. So if they haven't changed the base of your cream, I would suggest you do that first. And then sometimes changing application site also helps, although if you're applying to genitals right now and 20 clicks and your total is only 300, your levels are a little bit on the lower side.
They are.
But your free testosterone is what we really want to know, and that's affected by sex hormone binding globulin, which is a protein molecule. So sometimes even with what seems to be quote-unquote low testosterone, we get very good free testosterone levels if sex hormone binding globulin levels are nice and low. So you do want to take a better look at the panel and to see what is your free testosterone. In our clinic, our goal is to keep our patients between 150 to 180, our men around 150 to 180 for free testosterone. And I'm pretty sure you're much lower than that right now.
But Samara, did you catch how much testosterone was per cc?
No, I didn't either. It's just the dispense amount.
Yeah, and that confuses me a bit.
Right.
See, the amount of testosterone in the cream is the first variable. And some creams only have like 50 milligrams of testosterone per gram. Others have 100 or 150 or 200. The cream that I personally use has 200 milligrams per cc.
Yeah, so, we can go up to 300 milligrams per cc.
But, you know, my own stops at 200, and that's a pretty strong whack.
Yes.
And then the second factor is how much cream you use. And the third factor is not just where you put it, but how much surface area you apply it to. Okay. So there's a lot of ways we can raise your dose. But the first thing you need to know is how much testosterone is in each cc of the cream.
Yeah.
So you need to check with your naturopath and say, how much testosterone is in each cc?
Right. Okay. And then when you checked the levels last time, do you remember what they were?
Yeah, as a matter of fact, on February 25th of last year, I don't have the latest one here. I'm just looking for. Anyway, I originally was at 845.
Okay.
For the total, and 3 was at
25. 845 is a very nice range.
Yep.
That would be a place I'd really smile if I saw you at. So, you know,
it was a year and a half ago, and my free testosterone apparently was pretty high at 20.5.
Okay, so And I, so in the, our terms, probably
200.
Yeah. All right. So, yeah, you had a very, very nice blood levels of both free and total a year ago. So why did it suddenly change?
Yeah, and sometimes, don't forget, it could be a lab outlier too. Yeah. So if it suddenly drops from 800 to 300, I'd question the lab as well.
Yeah, that's my first thing, is to repeat the lab study. Yeah. And then, the, as I said, the next thing is how much testosterone, because you can just increase the strength of the testosterone per CC. Mm-hmm. The next thing is how much surface area do you apply it to? Mm-hmm. Is it just the testicles, or is it the testicles and the penis? And the even the upper thighs or into the axilla. You know, I use a relatively small amount. I'm not using, you know, 20 clicks. I'm using 8 clicks, okay? But it's 200 per cc, so, you know, I don't need as much volume. But then with wet hands, you can put it all over the penis and the scrotum and just kind of massage it in. And then what's left on my hands, I put up on my shoulders and across my upper arms and biceps, and then finally into the axilla, into the armpits. So it increases the surface area. The more skin you apply it to, the more surface you have to absorb the drug. Okay? And so you may not have to use more drug, or you may not have to use a higher concentration. You may just need to increase the surface area of the skin you're applying it to. And that can make a difference.
So I guess my understanding was that it had to be on the thinnest skin, but you're saying it doesn't really matter as long as I get more surface area.
The thinner the skin, the better it will be absorbed. The richer the blood supply to that skin, the better it will be absorbed. So the testicles and the penis are very thin skin with a very rich blood supply. So that's a very nice place to put it. But if you put it on thicker skin, you will get a little less absorption. But if you put it on enough more skin, it compensates for the thicker skin. Okay? So the outer arms, the shoulder, the biceps, the inner arms into the armpit, that's, again, very thin skin.
And then the outer chest wall, where there's less body hair, is also a very good place.
Yes.
Good place to apply it.
Sure. So, now, and at your age, you're not worried about coming in contact with small children. You know, so, but you don't want to be, you know, if you have bare arms and you put it on your arms, you don't want to be hugging little girls. You know, if you got female grandchildren, you don't want to wrap them up in your testosterone covered arms. Mm. All right. So, you know, we do need to use good sense, and where we put it depends on our social situation, our age, our parenting styles, all sorts of things.
Also, does it affect pets, Dr. Mixon, if you were to have, you may not have children around, but pets that jump in your arms all the time?
I don't know. My cat doesn't jump in
my
arms.
I just wondered if it would affect or make them more aggressive.
Who knows?
It sounds like you're also saying that if I had moist hands, that would be better, because the cream has barely thick to my way of thinking, because my DHEA and my pregnenolone is a lot thinner than the testosterone.
Yeah, I always wet my hands. I put the little 8 clicks into the palm of one hand, and then I rub a few drops of water into that pan, and I rub my two wet hands together. So it's essentially a very thin liquid. So it liquefies. It's water soluble, and that means you can spread it over a large area very, very easily and get better absorption.
Great. I knew there was a reason why I called you.
Yes.
Well, thank you very much. You've given me some hope.
All right, so you take care. But first thing, go back and retest the test and see where you are.
And maybe we should talk a little bit about pellets, Jerry.
Okay, I'm looking at Lynette to see what our timing is.
Yeah, we have about a minute left before we have to take our break, and our next caller is waiting.
Okay, so pellets are pluses and minuses. You know, you put them in, they're there for 2 to 3 months, depending on how fast you absorb them. You can get quite high blood levels. The downside, for my point of view, is you lose the rise and fall. And, you know, it's that rise and fall that triggers your brain to suddenly want sex. I mean, you recognize the biggest sex organ in the human body is between the ears. It's the brain. Okay. And if you don't mind, it don't matter. So, you know, that's what you have to think about. If all you're looking for is muscle mass and strength, you don't need the rise and fall. You just need to have it available. But for the emotional changes, the bonding and so on, then the rise and fall can be important.
Yeah. And there's a convenience factor, too. I find that some people who don't want to apply a cream every day and would just have, you know, something placed in their body and it do its thing for 3 months. Mm-hmm. Yes, then obviously it makes a difference. But know that if it's high, then you have to deal with the consequences. If it's low, you have to deal with the consequences.
For 2 to 3 months.
There's nothing that can be done until you go back and get it changed again.
That's right.
Okay. So
I like the flexibility of the creams.
I agree with you.
And, you know, to spend 1 minute each morning putting on all my creams does not defend me.
No, the flexibility makes a big difference. And I tell my patients that, you know, depending upon whether you're going to have a strenuous workout day today, you can go up a little bit or not. And you taught me that. I learned that from you.
Very good. We'll be back with hour number two of Leading Edge Medicine. You stay right there, and our phone lines are open for you. Here's that number to call. It's 1-800-465-8770. That's 1-800-465-8770. Taking a quick break. We'll be right back with more Leading Edge Medicine.